House Bill 5039 and open a work session on House Bill 5039. And Sue, would you like to explain to us what documents we need to look at and where we are?
Madam Chair, this might be a little different, and members, this might be a little different from what you're used to, but since we're planning on deferring some decisions on a couple of the packages, I didn't do the spreadsheet you might be used to looking at. I'll have that for you on Monday when we finalize some decisions. Right now, I've just got a memo for you. And if you're really keen on looking at numbers, I'll refer you to in the budget document that the department has prepared in the tab called Agency Summary. It's up towards the front on page, looks like page 58. There's a spreadsheet of sorts in there that you can follow along with, and for each division, there are similar spreadsheets behind that. So that helps you. I'll just refresh your memories that the original 2001-03 governor's recommended budget for the Department of Revenue is $137.7 million total funds. And as part of his rebalance due to the March 2001 forecast, he added another $1.6 million to this budget for additional revenue generation for the general fund. And that brings his total recommended budget to $139.3 million. And that comprises $119,692,811 general fund and $19,564,961 other funds. That number includes a little bit of non-limited funds, which we really didn't talk about too much, but those pertain to the multi-state tax commission of which the department is a member. In summary, the budget adds new positions to generate additional general fund revenue, as you've heard, in the information processing division, in the personal tax and compliance division, and in the business division. It also addresses the cigarette tax compliance issue by adding new positions. Also adds positions, as you've heard, related to administration of the state's property tax system. As you probably figured out, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending adjustments to the governor's budget, and I've got those described in this memo. You know, I'll just go through those for you. First, an adjustment to the base budget is necessary because of revised PERS rates. You've probably heard that the rate for contributions has gone down from 16.31% to 16.06%. That affects this budget by, just for the base budget, by $140,971 general fund and then $23,510 other fund. I'm also recommending that package 030, which has to do with inflation and state government service charges, be reduced for three issues. Number one, the Attorney General hourly rates have been decreased from $1.06 per hour to $97 per hour as a result of the work done by the Public Safety Subcommittee of Ways and Means. That results in this package in a reduction of $207,675 general fund and $8,049 other funds. Additionally, there have been reductions in charges from the Department of Administrative Services Human Resource Services Division and also from the Secretary of State Audits Division. For the Human Resource Services Division, that results in a reduction to this budget of $11,458 general fund and $1,562 other funds. And for the Secretary of State's Audit Division charges, that results in a reduction of $50,663 general fund.
Yes, Senator Dukes.
Is your preference to do these all at the end, or do you want to do some of them as we move along?
Yes, I think we'll just do them as we move along.
Okay, then I would move that we adopt those first two LFO recommendations.
You've heard Senator Dukes' motion. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, so moved.
Next, what I have listed there in the memo is Package 090, and this is a package that reduces the department's budget by $4.5 million total funds, 50 positions, and 35.45 FTE. And the department has realized process efficiencies during this biennium, and it's allowed it to make reductions in staff with minimum short-term impact on services, so they're not anticipating any impact during the 0103 biennium. There are also reductions made due to simplification in the timber tax program. I would point out that the majority of the eliminated positions are vacant, seasonal, or currently filled by retiring staff. There, as I understand it, there are about three positions that are filled currently that wouldn't come under one of these, and the department's personnel division is working with those employees to try to find them other positions within the department. The reduction also, this package also includes a $1.8 million increase in their services and supplies budget. A decrease in their services and supplies budget, and they haven't yet specifically determined where they're going to take this part of the overall reduction. Mm-hmm. And the LFO recommendation is to approve this package.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of Package 090.
Senator Dukes moves adoption of Package 090. Any discussion? Any objection? Not so moved.
Next, I have listed their policy option package 141. This is the package that has to do with the ORMAP system, the organ mapping system. In the governor's recommended budget, the package provides $2 million other funds expenditure limitation, which would enable the department to disperse the funds that are coming into the Oregon Land Information System Fund. These funds would go out to the counties for continuing development of the statewide base map system. And as you heard, the funds are generated from the recording fee of $1 per subject document is provided for in legislation from last session, House Bill 2139. Based on current projections of the revenue stream from this source in 2001-03, I'm recommending that the limitation be reduced by $200,000, which would then provide a net $1.8 million other funds expenditure limitation.
Question?
Question, Representative Butler.
The recording fee, the subject document recording fee that were subject to House Bill 2139 from 1999 session, have accumulated will generate $1.8 million.
That's correct,
Representative
Butler. Madam Chair, I move adoption of Package 141.
Senator Dukes moves adoption of Package 141. Any discussion? Any objection? So moved.
Next is policy option package 142, and this is the package that provides 252,000 other funds expenditure limitation for increased costs that the department will incur for recording lien documents in their senior citizens and disabled citizens property tax deferral program. And again, there was legislation from last session which expanded the program to low-income disabled individuals and also which increased the per document recording cost and affects this program. And I'm recommending that you approve it at this level, this $252,000.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Yes, Senator Duke.
So where are the other funds coming from?
From the fees, aren't they? The document recording cost fees, or are they?
Madam Chair and Senator Duke, so this is a program where right now it's self-supporting, and the department pays the property taxes on behalf of these individuals mm-hmm. to the counties, and then as you know, as properties become ineligible, the department gets repaid, mm-hmm. and they take a portion of those funds off the top to cover their administrative costs, which is the recording one, and so it's just all a part of the...
The recording fees are separated, but I just wanted to make absolutely certain that my recollection is that this program at this level will continue to be self-supporting through this biennium, but we're right on the leading edge at that point, but we'll have to subsidize this with general funds next round. And again, that subsidy is in effect an advance, it's a loan back out, and I think Representative Witt carried that bill on the floor, but that's a subsidy that will be returned to the state with usury with necessary fees and so forth.
Representative, where does this, what part does the recording cost go into? Where does the fee go? The raised fee is in that bill?
The fee is for recording the documents. That was a bill that was passed in the 99 session to assist the counties in terms of their A&T process. So I think we're talking about the recording cost of those fees is what we're talking about right now.
Okay, thank you.
I move adoption of package 142.
Senator Dukes moves adoption of package 142. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, so moved.
Next, I've combined policy option packages 230, 250, and 260. They all have to do with taxpayer education assistance and enforcement to increase general fund revenues. And if these packages would add staff in, as I mentioned earlier, the information processing division, the personal tax and compliance division, and then the business division. The total for all three packages is $3,895,826 general fund and $46,987 other funds expenditure limitation, 39 positions and 37 FTE. And based on its historical experience, the department anticipates increased general fund revenues of $20 million from this investment for a net increase to the general fund of $16.1 million. What I'm recommending for these packages is, again, a reduction for the revised PERS rates, as well as PERS savings due to new hires not being eligible for PERS contributions for the first 6 months of employment. Now, not all the positions in these packages will come from outside the state system. The department promotes individuals from within the agency. It also hires individuals from other state agencies. So what I did is I used the experience that the department has had with hiring and promoting versus hiring outside the state system to make the adjustment. I'm also recommending a reduction in the packages for revised attorney general hourly rates because there are some attorney general costs included in these packages. In summary, my recommended adjustments then are as follows. Package 230 would be reduced by $1,718 general fund. Package 250 by $23,983 general fund and $25 other funds expenditure limitation. And package 260 by $9,648 general fund.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the LFO recommendations on option packages 230, 250, and 260.
Senator Dukes moves the recommendations of LFO on policy package 230, 250, and 260. Any discussion? Any objection? Not so moved.
Policy option package 330 is a package that provides additional general fund and additional other funds expenditure limitation for increased federal postage rates. These are actually the rates that the department currently is paying, so if there are increased rates next biennium, I would say that those have not been covered. It would add $94,899 general fund and $8,122 other funds expenditure limitation, and I recommend approval of the package.
Madam Chair, I
Representative Dukes.
Move adoption of package 330.
Senator Dukes moves adoption of package 330. Any discussion? Any objections? Not so moved.
Can I make a comment, Madam Chair?
Yes, please do.
Sometimes agencies wonder why they struggle in a relationship with the legislature. Now, here we have an agency that comes to us because they want an increase in the limitation for postage. Now, granted, they do a lot of postage. And that's the level they're willing to discuss with us. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's admirable. And I think sometime next week we're going to start with an agency that's actually creating new positions, new management positions, without so much as passing it, you know, vaguely by us. And so I think more agencies should pay attention to some of these that have figured out how to work with the folks that pass their budget.
Madam Chair, can I say kudos to Director Archenko? You know, I can't think of another agency, unless it would be the Secretary of State in an election year, that would be using more postage than this particular agency. They've got to communicate literally millions of communications on an annual basis, probably a third of which are by mail, mm-hmm. Or maybe not a full third when you talk about telephone and email communications. But as we hear on the morning news, it ain't getting much cheaper, folks. So here's, I think, a direct reflection of the responsible nature of this particular department. I appreciate it. Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, then we move into three packages that I'm recommending deferral on until Monday of next week. We have another work session scheduled for that day. I'll drop down to the third bullet below that. This is a slam dunk. It's similar to what I've already discussed in that it revises the package for PERS, but as of last night, I didn't have all the information, and so I wasn't able to come up with a finite number. And that has to do with the governor's revised budget, wherein he adds additional mm-hmm. staff to generate additional revenues. The remaining two packages, 140 and 160, 140, as you know, is the county support and valuation, and you heard the testimony earlier this morning. In the governor's budget, that adds $796 other funds expenditure limitation and seven positions, and uses a portion of the base budget to fund the entire package, $406,402 general fund. And as you heard, that would come out of the grant funds that currently are going to the county, so it would reduce that $5 million by that much. The department, I believe, has information on what they would be able to do if, for example, they got four positions rather than the seven, if the general fund stayed with the counties, and I'd like to invite them up at this time to talk about that. I would like to add that in the governor's budget, if you restore the money to the counties, if you agree to a reduced package for the department, that any amount over the $5 million is not in the co-chair's budget. So there was discussion of, you know, $5.2 million versus the five, presumably for inflation, about a 4% increase. If that's where you desire to go, what I would recommend to you then, since it's not in the co-chair's budget, is that you put it on your add back list. And I guess with that, I'd like to ask the department. Yes.
Madam Chair, as we're going to be short of time, could I have just a moment or two to discuss policy option package 160 before we go ahead with the other?
Yes, I will do that now. We will do that.
Do you want to reverse the...
I'm not sure that I do. Can we hold off just a minute? I'll make sure we have time.
All right.
I'm sorry, I was distracted. So we're going to discuss.
I started with package 140, which is the county support and valuation, and reminded the members that whether the $5 million goes out to the counties or you decide to, you know, reduce that and leave some with the department. That anything above the $5 million is not in the co-chair's budget, and I would recommend if you want to fund anything over the $5 million that you put it on your ad back rather than increase it.
Could you say that again?
Yes. Please repeat yourself, Sue. Sorry about that.
I'm not clear.
It's so easy for members.
No, it's me, it's Sue, yeah.
In the governor's budget, well, let me back up. In the agency's request budget, prior to going through the governor's process, coming to the governor's recommended budget, they had included the $5 million in special payments to the counties, the $5 million that was provided for last session. During the development of the governor's recommended budget, that $5 million was reduced by the $406,402 general fund to fund a portion of policy option package 140. Whatever decision you make, whether it's to go with what's in the governor's recommended budget or to make the counties whole with that $5 million and give the department fewer positions, whatever permutation you decide to go with, there had been discussion that the counties would like $5.2 million, presumably the $200,000 given for inflation. That amount is not in the co-chair's budget. And so that would have to be added, right, put on the add back.
And why is it LFO doesn't have a recommendation on this package?
Madam Chair and Senator Dukes, I was waiting to hear from the department on what they could do in terms of a reduced level of funding, reduced positions, and I didn't feel I had the information that I needed to come up with the recommendation.
Okay.
Explain that on the record. We're having a lot of discussion here because we're trying to, many of us would like very much to do exactly what the counties would like to do. We also don't have enough information to from the...
Madam Chair, I appreciate the fact that if we do move to the CSL amount on the $5 million, that we would have to take it back as an add back, or it would have to be extracted from other efficiencies, and I think this is a program that we've got to be careful of. So I think from a conceptual standpoint that I would like to have us consider honoring the $5 million that we committed to the counties in this subcommittee 2 years ago in the last biennium, and that we continue to look at the policy option package 140, recognizing that the $406,000 is going to have to be met as an obligation to the counties to pay the full $5 million package back to the counties, and then give staff direction to, as best as possible, perhaps even between packages 140 and 160, figure out how we can best get along with the monies that would remain to us. And I think from a conceptual basis, I would like to recognize the $5 million to the counties for the assessment taxation work, and then I hesitate to gut 140 immediately. However, if that's where we come to, because the total of 140 was $514,000 in other funds and $406,000 in general funds, and by the only place that we've taken the general funds is by moving. And I guess maybe legislative fiscal could tell us where the $514,000 would come from other funds at that point.
And I think that's what Supply Sue needs a little more time before we do anything drastic here to either the counties or the department, that we maybe get a little more information, and that's why we've got it on for Monday. But Sue, if you'd like to respond to what Representative
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, if I could ask the department to come up at this point and talk about how they would use that other funds limitation, how many positions it would buy, what kinds of services they would be able to provide to the counties. I think that would really help facilitate the discussion.
And we need to also have a discussion before Monday on Senate Bill 160, which is, I want to be sure and recognize Senator Hayden to start that discussion. So if the department could come up and discuss 140, and I have
I have a question while she's coming up.
Okay, and we have to adjourn about 10:25, so we've got 25 minutes to address some discussion on 140. We'll take half of that time in 160.
If we delete option package 140, does that keep the counties at the $5 million?
Madam Chair and Senator Dukes, yes.
And then we can put into the budget a note that, that the additional would be on our add that list.
Let me just clarify for ABIS purposes, for the automated budget information system purposes, that if you completely deleted package 140, I believe that wouldn't restore the $5 million through that process. Is that correct, Monica? Yeah, so, I mean, you'd have to make it clear that that's through the budget, through a budget note or through the budget report, exactly what you wanted to have happen.
Okay, where'd the rest of the $5 million go then?
Well, I, Senator Dukes, I hope I'm not getting too technical, but the way it was just moved in the budget document from special payments to the county, out of the base budget into this policy option package to fund this position. So if you completely eliminated that package, technically mm-hmm. speaking, it would that $406,000 would still go away. So you'd want to make it clear that you were going to restore the $5 million in the base budget. So
the concept would be that whatever we did with 140, the concept would be that we would leave the $5 million
hole. Mm-hmm. So that's another budget note. Okay.
Okay. Elizabeth, would you like to respond to some of the discussion you're hearing here?
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Elizabeth Harshenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. With me is Randy Evers, Administrator of the Property Tax Division. There were several questions that carried over from yesterday, as well as the question that Sue McGlashan has raised of if the $406,000 general fund portion of this policy option package were not granted, what would the department be able to do with just the other fund piece? And Randy's prepared to answer those questions.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, for the record, Randy Evers, Administrator of the Property Tax Division. I would ask the committee chairs, would you prefer to start with the option package and respond to that, or go back through the three questions that committee members asked previously?
Let's respond. In the essence of time, let's go ahead and respond to the concerns about package 140.
I'd like to give just a little bit of background. In talking to the counties and to the different assessor's offices, we had some conversation about if the department was to help in any way to the counties, what might that look like and how could we put a package together? And we heard two primary themes from the counties. One was in the area of training and assisting new county assessors. There are about eight new county assessors in the last couple of years statewide, and they often call us and ask for assistance. So one of the ideas was to put a person in our field office to actually go to counties one by one and help assessors. And the second one was to provide training statewide. As you discussed earlier, Measure 50 is very complicated. Representative Butler understands that well. And part of this was to provide additional training to county staff. The other thing we heard, the second theme, was in the growth in the industrial properties and in the centrally assessed properties, which we discussed, I believe, on Tuesday, the importance of maintaining accurate values, because those are tax dollars that come through, again, to the cities, the counties, and the special districts. When we put our package together, the reason that you see the general fund and other funds split, the revenue source for the other funds comes from the grant. What the statute says is that the department can take our actual expenditures up to 10% of the grant, and that would come from the other funds. It also says that those services that we can provide are limited to assisting the counties, so that was two of the positions. And then it says, and Gil Riddell talked about this earlier, helping the counties appraise the industrial properties between $1 and $5 million. So the other funds piece, which is the $514,000, was the other funds portion, and we could provide those services. The reason we requested general fund monies was to also provide the appraisal work in central assessment, and for the industrial properties that exceed $5 million. We can't use the grant monies for that. We need the general fund monies for that portion. So let me respond. If we were asked to remove the general fund portion from our package, that would leave the four positions, and the work that we would do would be to continue to support the county, the assessor's office, and training, do the industrial properties between $1 to $5 million, and that would generate about $1.9 million in property tax revenues. The initial package had 3.88. We would need to reduce that to $1.9
million. Okay. Questions?
Madam Chair, what I'd like to do is just sort of give the mirror on that. As you looked at the budget presentation document yesterday, and we showed you the growth in the number of industrial accounts with basically a flat staff, and the growth in the number of utility accounts, centrally assessed, which is the trains, the planes, the telecommunications, and the energy companies, with flat staff and big growth in numbers of accounts and even bigger growth in total value on the roll, the general fund portion is what goes to the really big dollar accounts. And because we're not allowed under the statute to use the up to 10% of the grant funds for those big dollar things, all we would be able to do with the other fund money is the smaller industrials, $5 million or less in value, and the support in the training and guidance to the county staff. So that's sort of the choice of not using any general fund to support part of the package.
Senator Dukes.
What's the number again on additional property taxes that you believe that would be raised with the additional personnel?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, the initial package, which included all seven positions, was $3.88 million in property tax revenues. A reduced package that included only the other fund portion would be $1.9 million in property tax revenues.
But the other fund is the transfer tax money that we've been discussing, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, the other fund portion would be the grant monies. It primarily consists of the delinquent interest that comes into the department, the interest between 12 and 16% on delinquent accounts, and then there's a document fee of $11 per document filed in the clerk's office, and that's the other major component of the grant funds.
So what happens if you lose the general fund and the other funds?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, we would go about doing business as we do today, and we would have some concerns over those large industrial values being maintained at the level we would like to maintain them, and we would have to continue the existing level of service we provide the counties, and we're hearing from the counties some additional assistance would be very much appreciated.
Okay, $3.88 million would be gone. I mean, there are properties that you wouldn't be able to adequately...
Senator Dukes, that's correct.
...appraise, so we catch them someday, but not in the next biennium. So I guess the question for me, Madam Chair, to the counties is, which do they want, the $3.88 million or the 4 or whatever the numbers are in here?
$406,000. You mentioned...
But they don't get the 300. I mean, the $388 million goes to all of the taxing districts in the
right.
state, so it's not all going... I didn't mean to imply it was all going to the counties.
No, I know you didn't mean that.
But may I make a distinction so that I know that what we're talking about, that I'm clear, that with the $514,796 of other funds, which comes from the grant fund money, or from the grant fund, would still provide 4 positions, which provide for the technical support, including training and assistance of assessors, and continues to assist with the $1 to $5 million appraisals.
That's correct.
But if you leave that, you don't get to the $5 million.
With the $514,000 of other funds, we do, and the total package was a total of $920,000, and here you could continue on with 4 positions at 514, if I understand it correctly, and still make the counties whole, not whole, but return $5 million to the local assessment departments.
Well, I thought the 514 came out of the $5
million. No, it doesn't. It's in addition to. So only that's general fund. The 406 is general fund.
The 406 is general fund, but the 514
is grant fund.
So if you continue... I mean, if you approve giving them that, then you don't get to the $5 million.
No, you do get to the. If you give them the $406,000 of general funds back to the counties, and correct me if I'm wrong, that makes them whole. It brings them back to the 9901 level at $5 million, and out of the other funds, the grant funds that we presently are receiving from the 14-16, or from the 12-16%. We continue to fund not seven positions, but four positions. And those four positions would provide the industrial account appraisals for $1 to $5 million and additional technical assistance support to the assessors, which is what they had, you know, given their druthers. They would like to have some technical assistance available and some training available from the department. And that would be at a reduced level, obviously, from seven positions to four positions.
Madam Chair, I have some really basic questions then. I thought that the general fund was just regular general fund, and I didn't know we were talking about, the possibility of sending that to the counties. I thought we were looking at the other funds, which are part of the county's grant program, and giving that to the, keeping that in the grant program, therefore getting us back up to the $5 million and keeping that whole. I just assumed the general funds were going to get lost because they were general funds, and we needed them to balance the whole budget. So I'm confused.
Does the department want to make any clarifications on what the discussion they've been hearing?
Well, Madam Chair, I have a process offer for you. Given the time and the fact that you wanted to at least have some conversation around Package 160, perhaps we could sit down with Senator Dukes.
Okay.
Offline and just sort of walk through the numbers and the two funding sources and what's related to what before Monday.
I appreciate that. And what I'm going to ask is that be on both of these packages or any budget notes anybody has is to visit with the department and legislative fiscal staff so that we're all clear on Monday, because I don't want anybody to not understand totally what's going on. And with that, let's see, you mentioned, Randy, you had three questions as well to answer. Is that to do with Package 140? Okay. You want to go ahead and answer those three questions? We've got about 5 minutes, and we'll switch to Package 160.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I will try to be brief. There were two questions posed by Representative Butler and one question posed by Senator Dukes, and let me see if I can address those. Representative Butler had asked if we knew the amount of staffing at the counties that supported assessment and taxation since Measure 50 was passed. And I do have those numbers for the fiscal year 97-98. There were 935 positions in the counties that supported assessment and taxation. For the following year, 98-99, it remained at 935, so it was stagnant. For the fiscal year 99-2000, it was reduced to 931. So reduction of four positions. And for the current fiscal year ending 0001, the total staffing is 926, so an additional reduction of five. So for the last 4 years, there's been a change of nine positions, and that's a reduction.
Senator Dukes?
Is that actual reduction of positions in the budget, or are some of those vacancies? For example, Clatsop County doesn't, we only sort of have an assessor. You know, we've got two co-assessors who have been hanging around for a while and they're temporary or something. But at any rate, so the assessor's position technically is vacant, but it's in the budget. So.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, this information comes from the grant application. Each year, all 36 counties provide a grant to the department, and they identify how many positions and the funding for those positions, and that's where we took the data. The second question that Representative Butler asked had to do with a situation where a large industrial taxpayer would appeal their value, not pay the taxes, and then 4 or 5 years later reach a settlement with the county and basically forego the interest. And I think the concern was around both the time use of money and the fact that the taxing districts would not have those taxes. So in the last couple of days, we went back to the department, we sampled about 10% of our industrial accounts that are under appeal and actually contacted the counties. And for all of those accounts that we contacted the counties, all the taxes have been paid. So the result of that, then, they will go through their appeal, and if they are successful with some value reduction, taxes will be refunded with interest at 12%. I did want to remind the committee that before Measure 50, there was a rule called 1/4 of 1%, and I'm wondering if Representative Butler might remember this. In a nutshell, the way that it worked was if there was an appeal of any account that represented 1/4 of 1% or more of the total value in the county, so it was a lot of dollars, the process worked like this. The taxpayer would pay the tax on the agreed-to amount of value, and then they had two options. One option was to put the remaining disputed taxes into an escrow account to earn interest. The second option was the taxpayer could take the risk, go through the appeal, and if they were unsuccessful, then they would have to pay the tax and interest at the statutory rate. So that was a law that went away under Measure 50.
So, Randy, in your opinion, at this time, all based upon your sample, all disputed taxes are being paid timely, and then the dispute continues on with the Attorney General after that?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I'm not sure I could say all, but certainly the majority are paid, and then there's a refund if they are successful in having a value reduction.
Thank you.
And with that, we have one more question?
Okay. Yes, Madam Chair. Senator Dukes had remembered a discussion, I think, in writing Measure 50 about remodeling and $10,000 and $25,000 threshold. And I wanted to just very quickly, the Measure 50 limit for existing property, the legislature set a threshold of when that value could be increased. And basically, the threshold is at $10,000 in any 1 year. So if you add $11,000, a new deck and a hot tub and some other things, that $11,000 value would increase the Measure 50 limit. As long as it's under $10,000 in any 1 year, there's no adjustment to the Measure 50 limit. Then the issue came up, well, what if they did 9 in the first year, 9 in the second year, 9 in the third year? So a second threshold that the legislature put in place, if in 5 consecutive years it's more than $25,000, that also would trigger an increase in Measure 50, and you would go back and pick up that entire value.
What I was wondering was, where's the line between remodeling and new construction? Between that deck and the hot tub and skylights in the existing...
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, that's an excellent question. That's an appraisal question. Let me give you one scenario that might help answer that. If you were to go up on your roof and maybe replace a quarter of the roof with new shakes or new shingles, that's considered maintenance and repair, and that does not constitute new addition value. But if you were to go up and tear off your old shingle roof and put a brand new tile roof on, that would be considered new property, and that would increase the Measure 50 limit.
But if you took the shingles off and replaced them with shingles?
Probably not. I'm probably not an expert
on those discussions. And we went through replacing a roof should be considered just maintenance. But
you
make a good point if you're going to go make it a lot more expensive because of the type of material you use. I was just curious. I had this interesting discussion with an appraiser, and we had some differences of opinion.
Okay, next we will go to package 160, and I'll have to leave in about 10 minutes when I'm asked. Butler to continue so we can have the discussion adequately that we need to have before Monday. So, Representative Hayden, would you like to?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I think 5 minutes will be more than ample for my needs. I want to discuss in advance of Monday policy option package number 160 to hire 9 positions or to provide 9 positions for enforcement and education. The addition of 9 enforcement officers would cost about $996,000 per biennium, and it's anticipated that their work would produce a net gain in revenue of up to $6.1 million. But more important, to my way of thinking, it may also reduce consumption of an unhealthy product. As we know, tobacco causes diseases, and diseases are expensive to treat. So it is probably less expensive to hire 9 enforcement officers to reduce consumption of this unhealthy product than it is to hire 9 doctors to treat the diseases that the tobacco causes, diseases such as emphysema, oral and lung cancer, and periodontitis, which is a tobacco-exacerbated disease. I would propose to this committee, and I will discuss before Monday with the co-chairs, that the up to $6.1 million increase in revenue be used for health care to mitigate the expense and damage caused by the use of tobacco. Now, although the funds could flow to almost any health program such as OHP, I would suggest an innovative use of the funds. Dental decay is the most common disease known to humanity, preventable with very simple techniques such as fluoridation of water supplies. The ongoing expense of fluoridating public water supplies is minimal, perhaps 25 cents per capita per year. And the bang for your buck, the payback is enormous in terms of saved costs. However, there's an infrastructure investment that's fairly substantial for small water districts to set up the infrastructure to fluoridate the water system. Once the infrastructure's in place, the expense is negligible. I would propose to use the $6.1 million from enhanced tobacco collections to set up a grant program for water districts, cities, and counties who wish to voluntarily, with the support of their citizens, to fluoridate their water supplies and to install the equipment necessary for fluoridation. Now, we're often told that pay me now or pay me later. If we do this now, 20, 30 years from now, we're going to save a lot of money. This program, fluoridating water supplies, because of the physiology, will very, very quickly, within 4 years, begin to pay back, because the physiology, very briefly, is that systemically ingested fluoride bonds in the enamel of the teeth as they develop in 1- and 2-year-olds. Those teeth erupt at the age of 6, only 4 years later. If they're protected by fluoride, the teeth are very strong. They don't decay. They don't have to be extracted. They don't have to be filled. It saves a lot of toothaches, and it saves a lot of OHP costs. So you get a very quick return on your investment. Over time, you'd easily save $50 to $100 million by investing this $6.1 million per biennium into a general fund. So, Madam Chair, that's a little bit innovative, I know. I will be discussing it with co-chairs and with other members of the committee, and I appreciate your courtesy in letting me express this program.
And I make sure all my grandchildren have fluoride treatment, so they don't have the same toothaches I did when I was little. I understand your concern. I know there's other questions about the package.
Great twist on the compliance portion, and particularly on the education portion. It's a different kind of education, but as Representative Hayden says, very innovative. It's a good place to start education. Are you going to fluoridate my water?
Am I going to fluoridate your water? The last time I looked, our 32 tax programs did not include water fluoridation. We've been asked to take on some very innovative things, but that one is a little beyond our expertise, and there's probably another agency that has that ability.
Administer that.
Yes. Madam Chair, I would like to make 4 brief comments addressing the policy package and specifically some of the issues that arose yesterday. I'm concerned that we may have left a misimpression with the committee about the package, and I wanted to just be sure that we were as clear as possible.
If I leave during your
I won't be offended.
Not because I have anything, but that I have to go.
Okay. During the discussion yesterday, Representative Butler, I believe, asked me, and I did not respond, and I apologize for that, about my commitment to the package. You asked if we were confident, and if personally if I was confident, that if we were given these resources that we could produce this revenue that we promised to the governor. And John answered right away, and his confidence level is extraordinarily high. And I just wanted to say for the record that mine is as high as John's, that we really poked and prodded and pushed on this package in the agency, exactly the kinds of questions that you asked yesterday. Because of the past experience we've had with the program, the new things that we're discovering, how we think we want to try to address them, what we think is going to be successful. And so we went through a lot of soul searching in the agency as we decided to go forward with this package. So I just wanted to tell you personally, as a commitment from me to you, that I have confidence that if you give us these resources, that we can achieve the results that we've said that we would achieve. Secondly, Representative Hayden, you expressed interest in the bills that the department had put in on the policy side to assist us in upgrading the statutes and enabling us to carry out the enhanced compliance work that we want to carry out. There were 3 bills. Senate Bill 422 and Senate Bill 424 have been signed into law by the governor. Senate Bill 423 is still in Senate Judiciary. There was a work session last week, which John attended, and he believes that the committee is favorably disposed toward the bill and will be reporting it out. We also had some conversation about the consequences to retailers who purchase cigarettes from other than a licensed, reputable dealer or distributor. And I think there was just a little confusion about what the consequences are to a retailer. If I'm a mom-and-pop grocery store, mom-and-pop cigarette shop, and I get a phone call from somebody saying, I've got a great deal for you. I can sell you cartons of cigarettes at $6 or $7 below what you would have to pay if you bought it from one of the licensed distributors. What's more likely to happen is that that person would pull up to my shop with an unmarked van, sell me cigarettes, not give me a receipt, and if the department then later came in and said, these either are unstamped or the stamps are counterfeit or they're Montana stamps and not Oregon stamps and we're going to seize the product, I'm going to be left holding the financial bag. That person who drove up in that van is not going to reimburse me for the cost of that product. So there is a real economic consequence to the retailer. And one of the things that is very important in this package for us is getting out and educating retailers about the consequences of the choice of dealing with somebody who's trying to give you a free lunch. Our strategy is not to be engaging in law enforcement. In the agency, we have a very long-standing history of letting the cops do the cop work. We don't have licensed law enforcement people on staff, and when we need law enforcement skills, we go to the state police, we go to local law enforcement, we go to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, work very, very closely and effectively with them. They've got the skills, they've got the training. We do the accounting, the auditing, the verification work that they need so that they've got the information to do the work that they do. But we would not anticipate with this package training any of our people to do law enforcement work. We would continue to expect that we would work with existing law enforcement resources for that part of the job, and that what we anticipate we would be doing is trying to do some real preventive education with those retailers who are tempted to buy cheap to try to compete. We've got a lot of support from our licensed distributors. Obviously, anybody coming in and selling cigarettes that aren't stamped or that are counterfeit or from another state are creating an uneven competition in the market. And so as far as an information resource, I think the distributors, our licensed, legitimate distributors, are behind us in trying to help deal with these issues. So what we're asking you is for you to have confidence in our administrative decisions on how we can best manage this growing compliance problem and give us the tools so that we can do that. We'd very much like to report back to you and let you know how it is we're doing, and what tools we're using and how we're deploying the staff.
Representative Hayden?
There has been some discussion of using not salaried state employees but contract workers to do that type of work. What would your response to that be?
I'd be very concerned about our ability to meet the commitment that we made in the budget because of the skill sets that we need in order to do the work that we're planning to do. I would offer you that if you're concerned that because it's really taking the program to a new level, that limited duration positions could be made to work for us and we could report back and you could decide on whether we've achieved the results without committing to permanent staff that end up getting embedded in the current service level. But we don't know of anybody out there that we could contract with to do the kind of work that we're talking about doing. We're looking at strategic analysis. We're looking at some really hard audit work in some areas, and we're talking about the skills that our revenue agents basically have, which is a lot of interpersonal as well as the knowledge of our programs in order to educate folks about the consequences of making bad choices. So it's actually the very live presence of people who are identified with the department as department people that are going to be a key to this strategy. So we could not commit to the revenue stream if we were contracted out.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would be very happy to do is you say either limited duration or a permanent state employee. So I think it's a good thing. Politics is the art of compromise, and if having retired OSP officers do it is the best you can get, I would take it. And as I said before, my interest in the net revenues would be to mitigate some of the damage caused by health disease. It's my belief that the, which is none of your business, but that the tobacco settlement should have gone to health care. I see no relationship between the tobacco settlement and the ending balance, or the tobacco settlement and the general fund, but yet some of those streams are flowing there, so money does flow in strange places, even to water fluoridation, I guess. Okay. That's it.
Thank you very much, Representative Hayden. Thank you very much, Director Harchenko, and I appreciate your commitment and John's response. Even though you didn't jump to your feet, I heard you and saw you stir when I asked that question as to the commitment to and for the record, I think according to the package, that's a generation of $7.1 million of new revenue in exchange for the just under $1 million of outflow. So it provides for, number one, an excellent return. Number two, if we can look at that over a long period of time, the compliance factor pays big dividends too. I would just ask the department if number one, we could have you do some estimates of, well, first of all, perhaps some contacts with the Department of Oregon Alcohol, Drug and whatever program, Drug and Alcohol from ODAP anyway, is the, I'm sorry if I got put mine in the pig for ODAP, and I don't know what it stands for. Probably half the employees don't either. So.
The Office of Drug and Alcohol Programs, Mr. Chair.
Well, where is the extra A on it?
Office of Drug and Alcohol is the A.
O A.
Drug Office is the O.
Office.
D is drug.
O A D A P.
Oh well, then I've only seen O D A P. But anyway, we will consult with the health division. Yeah.
It's what the
O squared.
O squared, something like an A squared. But if I could have you check with those folks, I understand that they are running the SIR program and some other kinds of things. And then perhaps, see, we've got before us right now OLCC. They have a set of enforcement officers and enforcement programs. And they work locally with the peace officers. Mm-hmm. And so maybe if you can check with the OLCC to see if there's any way we can piggyback with some of their enforcement, because you've got, when you've got a sting operation ongoing, they don't just have one person in the store, they'll have as many as four people in the store at one time. And certainly at least one of those four people could be looking at stamps. And I appreciate the fact that might be something that's presently out of their training level, but I would ask that you at least examine that. And then also, I mean, if I went down, from my own experience, and I don't want to bore you folks with that, but from my own experience of owning a convenience store in the travel industry, and remembered the number of people that were checking us on a regular basis, including the local health officers on a regular basis as well, because if you've got hot dogs or sandwiches in the cooler, then you go through that whole process. But I'm wondering how much local cooperation we might be able to buy for, you know, some of this same kind of investment. Then,
Mr. Chair, may I answer that?
You've already checked into
because
it with ODAP.
We are partnering with OLCC. We are partnering with local law enforcement, because even having 10 people in a unit dealing with cigarette tax compliance isn't going to provide the kind of coverage that we know that we need. So we are already planning on that leveraging. That's part of the strategy, is to cross-train with OLCC and cross-train with anybody who's going to be out there,
then
so
I,
that we got more eyes and ears out
then
there.
Then I guess I need some assistance as to the total number of employees that are doing this in Washington and in California, where we have high levels of taxation, as much as a third more than ours, because we've received some numbers as to the number of people that were in California and were in Washington. And considering the size of the state of Oregon in relationship to the size of those two adjacent states, we would be putting on, in my recollection, is we're within two or three positions of what all of the state of Washington would have at a third higher tax. At nine positions, my recollection was that Washington had like 10 people that were in this process.
Did you have
Mr. Chair, just a point of correction here. John Scott, Administrator for the Department of Revenue, Business Division. And you were asking about the number of staff in the state of Washington. We actually contacted the state of Washington, and they have ongoing approximately 17 staff that are assigned specifically to tobacco and cigarettes.
Now, those are the compliance and enforcement people that are doing the same thing that these nine people would do?
That is correct.
Okay.
They are also sworn officers.
17 sworn officers.
In addition to that, because they also administer the alcohol and liquor programs, they have the ability to call on another 30 or 40 at any given time for surveillance, for seizure, so they have a tremendous capacity.
In conjunction with the alcohol
program? In conjunction,
program. Okay.
Exactly.
And then California has 100, as I recall.
California has approximately 12 that are specifically assigned to cigarette and tobacco. Like Washington, they also have the expanded capacity to call on another 30 or 40. And I can get you the exact numbers from those states if you'd like. And
we'll have that for you Monday, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Thank you very much. And if we could at least have you contact I don't know what organization, Gil Riddell is still here from the counties, but we have a number, even in Niagara County, we have a number of excellent retired law enforcement people who could certainly on a regular basis assist and be of assistance. And John, when you talk about expanded capacity, I mean, these folks are all trained. They maintain the BPSST licenses and training certificates, and they continue to carry, and they can be excellent resources for us in that capacity. So, again, I would like to have us make sure that we can piggyback on anything that might be available and then know what resources we might be able to draw on as well out in the field. And then finally, because session has now started, I understand, I just want to make sure that before Monday that you have an opportunity to contact those members who did have questions today or who may have further questions, such as Senator Dukes, relative to the property tax package and so forth, Elizabeth and or Director Archenko. And then was there anything else that you'd like to add in at this time? Did you get through all of your notes and presentations?
No, I don't. I just wanted to be sure that I clarified what our strategy was with that package and to make sure that we didn't leave a misimpression about the sort of the law enforcement balance and the cooperation that we have with existing law enforcement.
I appreciate it is to identify and to educate and not necessarily just to enforce. And I've appreciated your particular emphasis on positions which are to educate and identify and not just the heavy hand of the law. And I also made a statement earlier that I want to make sure that absolutely everybody understands when you set your clock back in Eastern Oregon 20 years, that's as to the moral values, not as to our ability to get up and take care of the issues. We appreciate...
For the 1980s.
Yeah, but maybe even before that.
Well, the 50s.
Yeah.
Some people say
75 years, and I don't want to be that far behind. But I appreciate putting up with a little bit of mirth that I can throw in from time to time, because sometimes when you get a hard situation, you have to throw a little of that in. And when we're dealing with taxes and income taxes and tax collections, sometimes it gets just a little dicey. And so I do express my gratitude to all of you folks in the department for your patience and perseverance in putting up with we freshmen. We were just freshmen. I was just freshmen just 4 months ago. So, Representative Hayden is coming on senior at this point. So, thank you very much. Legislative fiscal?
Mr. Chair, I just would like to add one more thing, and at the bottom of the memo on the second page, I've got some budget notes listed down there. We can do those Monday, but I just wanted to alert you to the fact that there have been some budget notes requested by members, and we'll need to...
Okay, Representative Hayden and I are ready to pass those out right now, however.
Fortunately, you're not a quorum.
We lack quorum, so with that, thank you very much.
Thank you.
One other item?
Where do I go with questions about budget notes?
Questions about budget notes? If you will...
I have a question about the fourth budget note.
Would you go ahead and put that on the record?
I'm surprised to, I mean, this is not something that's come up that we were expecting, so I'm just needing a little help with what it is that the concern is that the budget note is designed...
Don't think the fluoridation of, oh, wait a minute, no, that's my number four.
It will be number six Monday, Mr. Chairman.
I could just clarify that. That was as a result of our conversation last evening.
Okay.
As you can see, it's also subject to the co-chair approval, co-chair's approval. And so, yes, the department was not aware of that, as they were the other budget notes.
Yes, the concern that we had, Director Archenko, dealt with the rather extensive amount that we're getting involved in Attorney General's fees, nearly half, in relationship to the amount of money collected to the property tax division, property tax work, versus the personal and business income taxes collect. Nearly half of all of the AG's fees go out to the property tax collection, and we, in relationship to the amount collected and from the two, from the property taxes versus the personal and business taxes, we'd like to be able to have a greater assurance, and that's where that came from. I beg your pardon. We didn't deal with fluoridation after all.
Well, perhaps we could just chat about that individually.
Do that. As I say, any of the concerns that you do have, if you would bring those up to individual members between now and Monday, that would be appropriate.
Thank you very much.
With that, we'll go ahead, and we have already basically de facto closed the work session when we dropped down to the two of us. So
majority of those present, I say, Mr. Chairman. Let's go right ahead.
I think the majority of those of us are present.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.